wish I was a mole in the ground. If I was a mole in the ground, I'd root that mountain.
Yes, folks, it's Monday, 9 a.m. You're listening to the Old Mole Variety Hour on KBOO Portland Radio. Reporting from planet Earth, where humans are changing the planetary climate at vast peril to their existence, though many millions, becoming billions, are fighting back ever more strongly as climate catastrophes become more frequent and the threat relentlessly increases. Yet still the world's elites and their politicians, they insist on doing nothing meaningful. So this week is really important. It's important for the planet, for on Friday coming to Portland and around the world, to be remembered as the Great Climate Strike. For it looks like to me the emergence of a great international movement led by our youth. That's what today's show, the Old Mole Show, will address. How the youth of the world are getting radicalized. How they are learning. How they are now leading the fight back. On today's Old Mole, we talk to Portland students organizing this Friday's strike that starts 10:30 at City Hall. We also hear from Greta Thunberg, whose example and eloquence galvanized those millions of students, making life very uncomfortable for rich elites. We hear her speech at the UN summit in Poland last year, a shot really heard around the world. She's also speaking at the UN this week. And this week is also important to Portland and us at KBOO, where we are doing our fall membership drive. We're listener-supported. 90% of our financing comes from membership, small donations from you, the listeners, who value independent radio. We're a community, volunteer-powered, that brings you the most interesting thinkers and doers on this planet. And in its programming, all of it, public affairs and music, we speak truth to power, and brings to all who want it 24 hours a day, 365 a year, on leap year two, we're always on the air, giving you a great stream of fresh air in our airwaves that's otherwise saturated with corporate pollution. We need you. You need us. More on that later. First on today's Old Mole, Desiree Hilligers interviews Bill Digelow and Tim Swinehart, who did the book A People's Curriculum for the Planet, Teaching Climate Change and the Environmental Crisis. We're offering it for a premium, a gift for taking out a KBOO membership or making a nice donation. Bill and Tim know students. They know today's movements. They've written a brilliant book. Now Desiree, Bill, and Tim.
So my guests today are Bill Digelow and Tim Swinehart, co-editors of the People's Curriculum for the Earth, Teaching Climate Change and the Environmental Crisis. Bill Digelow is curriculum editor for Rethinking Schools, co-director of the Zen Education Project, and author-editor of a number of books on pedagogy published by Rethinking Schools, including the groundbreaking book Rethinking Columbus. Tim Swinehart teaches at Lincoln High School. He regularly writes for Rethinking Schools magazine, and his essays include Stealing and Selling Nature, Why We Need to Reclaim the Commons in the Curriculum, which is a personal favorite of mine and which I regularly teach in a course on 17th century literature at Washington State University, Vancouver, along with excerpts from Rethinking Columbus. And I think it needs to be said that while Rethinking Schools curriculum is geared toward K-12 education, their materials can also be adapted for use at the university level. Rethinking Schools and a Zen Education Project have an upcoming conference, Northwest Teaching for Social Justice, Saturday, October 19th at Chief Seattle High School in Seattle, and the website for that is nwtsj.org. So thank you both so much for joining me here today.
Thank you, Desiree.
Thank you.
Yeah, so you were both driving forces behind Resolution 5272, which is the climate justice education resolution passed in May 2016, which mandates the teaching of scientifically based climate justice curriculum and includes the use of corporate climate denial materials. And this was an absolutely groundbreaking resolution, but one which really has not been fully implemented in Portland public schools.
I think one of the things that we talk about a lot is that I like to focus on is that this is different than just climate literacy. It's specifically a climate justice resolution because it does focus on the importance of not just scientifically based climate education, but also the need for students to see themselves, and this is language from the resolution, to see themselves as activists for social and environmental justice. And I particularly see that as important at this point with my students, because we're at a point where, you know, we're facing this massive crisis. You know, students, I teach 16-year-olds, 17-year-olds, and we've all been told that we have a decade to kind of turn this ship around. That's right, this train that's headed for a cliff, and that's frightening. It's scary, right? And if all actually that we give them is a good scientific understanding of the issue, it doesn't give us a path forward. And so it's really specifically this focus on empowering themselves, seeing themselves as activists, as change makers, which I think has really made the difference for a lot of our students in PPS.
I think one of the other things that distinguishes a climate justice curriculum from just a climate literacy curriculum is that it asks the big why questions. You know, how did we get here? How is the system of capitalism implicated in this crisis that we find ourselves in that threatens life on Earth? And another thing that a climate justice curriculum does, and it's articulated in Resolution 5272, is it puts the experiences of frontline peoples at the center of the curriculum. The people who are hit the first and the worst. And so it's not just looking, as Tim says, it's not just looking at the science, although it is that, but it's looking at the social implications and asking why, and also how do we get out of this? It's asking students to imagine themselves as activists, and it ought to be embedded in a broader people's history curriculum so that young people see that everything that is decent and good and democratic about our society is because people organized and fought for it.
This curriculum, which is being taught by a lot of teachers in the Portland Public School District, is still taking a little while to kind of filter out there, right?
That's true. We are making significant progress, and I think one thing that I am wanting continually these days to make sure to do is to really shine a light on the student activism in this district over the last 7-8 months. And so the district is moving in the right direction. We, in a few weeks, will have the first district-level climate justice coordinator probably in the country coming on board to start helping with this work at an institutional level. And we also just, families in PPS, just on Friday received notification from the district, thanks to the pressure of students, not because the district would have made the right decision on its own, but because of that pressure from student activists demanding that they be given the chance on Friday, September 20th, to participate in the global climate strike, that those will be excused absences for students and even student athletes. And that's a big deal.
It's a huge victory. But student activists in Portland wrote at the end of August demanding that the school district send out by September 5th a letter to teachers indicating that the strike is coming and offering resources to them, and specifically mentioned that the Portland Public Schools Climate Justice Committee has resources and can do it. And our committee wrote a letter asking for the top administrators to send this out to teachers. And here we are less than a week away from the strike, and they still have not done that. And so it's good to recognize the progress that the school district has made, but it's also important to recognize where they're dragging their feet, and that we need parents and climate activists and students to put pressure on the school district to live up to Resolution 5272.
I think part of that, too, it does get back to what this moment demands of us. And it demands that we really rethink what we mean when we talk about curriculum in schools and who controls that and where that comes from. And I think that's part of what we're running up against here, is the traditional notion that curriculum is determined by people in a district office, and then that is mandated to teachers, and that's not going to give us the curriculum that we need to be nimble and to kind of deal with the changing nature of the climate crisis. And so that will also continue to be a struggle, which is just to really recognize and to lift up and to share the incredible work that teachers across this district are already doing with regard to climate change and climate justice education, but just really, you know, finding a way to share that and facilitate that on the scale that we need right now.
Our intent, our vision is a grassroots process of curriculum development where people are talking about these issues. They're meeting together. They're having curriculum camps in the summer. They're teaching each other, and not to have like a thing that is developed on high and then imposed on teachers. That's never been our intent.
Right.
Yeah, and I mean, I think one of the beauty of some of the Rethinking Schools materials and the materials in the climate collection is really the foregrounding of the voices of activists from frontline communities dealing with the worst effects of climate change, and really amplifying those voices and working with that organizing in the classroom.
Absolutely. Yeah. When we can't get our students out into the field, we need to bring the movement into our classrooms, and I think that's what some of the curriculum that we have worked on over the last few years is really making an attempt to show students that there is an incredible global social movement that is rising up to confront this crisis, and as soon as they can see that, and then they can begin to see themselves as part of that movement, there's a switch that clicks, and they're often able to move from this being an overwhelming, incredibly depressing issue, right, to one that presents an opportunity for them to see new ways of working and existing in the world.
And forming community as well.
Yeah.
You know, Howard Zinn talked about the importance of teaching a people's history. And I think also what we're trying to do is emphasize the importance of a people's pedagogy, one that really, where students are participants, where they're choice makers, where they're imagining and getting in touch with the experiences and the choices that organizers are encountering. And so that's a very different model than, we're not talking about, you know, answering the questions at the end of the chapter. We're not talking about listening to this lecture. We're not talking about filling out this worksheet. We're really talking about a different way of doing school.
One thing that the resolution calls for is to get out into the field, to the community, to get them involved. And so I had a chance this last week to take my environmental justice class on it's an official school field trip. So we were on a school bus, and we went someplace that probably not too many field trips have gone, which is down into the heart of the fossil fuel district in the Northwest Industrial District. And so we went right down to Zenith Energy, where they are bringing in oil trains from the tar sands and putting this onto ships to send off to Asia, which is exactly what Portland activists and eventually Portland City Council in 2016 said that we would not do in this city when we put a ban on future fossil fuel infrastructure. I had students that actually even had a chance to give testimony on that policy a few years ago. And so we met with two incredible organizers, Deneen O'Rourke and Elijah Setas, at Zenith. And you know, we were right there. We were 30 feet away from an oil tanker. I'm talking to them about why this is a local struggle that we should all be taking on, because this, you know, Zenith has become this poster child of what we can't be doing right now. It has to stop. And so then the next day, we happened to have a 30-minute meeting with Mayor Wheeler. And having had that experience in the field, you know, my students were ready to have a pretty tough conversation with the mayor about what the city can do and is going to do to make sure that we don't continue to be a fossil fuel hub.
You know, the kind of education that Tim is talking about is really what we imagined in the resolution. And if I could just read this one piece, that it all Portland Public Schools students should develop confidence and passion when it comes to making a positive difference in society and come to see themselves as activists and leaders for social and environmental justice. That's the policy of Portland Public Schools.
I want to just take another second to plug your upcoming conference on October 19th at Chief Sealth High School, particularly for teachers who are unfamiliar with the materials for Rethinking Schools and are really wanting to embrace this challenge.
We have an opportunity to bring teachers together from around the region to ask ourselves, what does social justice look like in the classroom? What does environmental justice look like? And what are our responsibilities beyond the classroom for effecting social justice education? And it's a day of of joy and you know, an opportunity for people of conscience, teachers of conscience, but also just community folk to come together and find each other and, you know, remember that we're not alone.
I mean, I'm wondering if you have any words of advice for teachers in area high schools who are not feeling supported by their administrators and who, you know, have a real interest and want to engage these issues.
Well, you know, there's a lot of curriculum that's available that it doesn't have to be part of the formal curriculum of that school district. At the Zinn Education Project, we have a whole Teach Climate Justice resource bank of lessons and stories and materials from other educators that people can draw on. And generally, you know, teachers have a lot more freedom sometimes than they think they do. You know, there's a lot of people out in the country you can kind of figuratively hold hands with and draw on what they're doing in their classrooms to bring into yours.
Yeah, as somebody who teaches in Vancouver, I just want to say that, hey, Vancouver people, let's see what we can do to try to implement a similar resolution across the river, because we're all impacted by the effects of fossil fuel, and we are the global choke point for fossil fuels moving from the tar sands, moving from the Bakken to international markets. So, yeah.
Hear, hear.
Thank you so much for joining me today. My guests have been Bill Bigelow and Tim Swinehart.
So just a quick postscript to let people know that we're into the 30-day comment period for the Kalama Methanol Terminal. For more information, go to the Columbia River Keeper website at columbiariverkeeper.org. This has been Desiree Hellegers for the Old Mole Variety Hour.
Oh, can you take care of her? Oh, maybe you can spare her several moments of your consideration leading up to the final destination. Oh, the earth is calling out. I wanna learn what it's all about, but everything I read is global warming going green. I don't know what all this means, but it seems to be
Well, that was a bit of my Miley Cyrus's song, Wake Up America. Last Saturday, I'm Bill Resnick, host of the show today, a host of The Old Mole. I interviewed three Portland organizers of the Great Climate Strike coming this Friday in Portland and around the world. Here's our conversation. It's coming up this Friday, the worldwide climate strike led by young people who face a lifetime of, afraid to say, climate misery, watching some semblance of normal life maybe collapsing, with nothing to be done on a ruined planet with the warming inexorably rising. That scenario is not a science fiction plot device. It could really happen. It's a warning from the vast majority of climate scientists. Today in the studio, I've asked three of these young people who are trying to make sure that humanity has a future. So Lana Jackson and Deneen, introduce yourself and tell us why you came today to radio on KABU.
Hi, I'm Lana Paris, and I'm a junior at Cleveland High School. I came here today to advocate for our movement.
Hi, I'm Deneen O'Rourke. I'm a campaign organizer with 350 PDX.
Hi, I'm Jackson Calhoun. I am a sophomore at Rex Putnam High School, and I came here today to spread the word about our strike and raise awareness about the environment.
There's a possibility of a dismal future.
So, as regards to the wording dismal future, I don't think I see a dismal future. I think I see possibility because we have been advocating. I get so much hope looking at all these people who have come together and really worked so hard in order to advocate for this movement and for our future. And so I know it seems dismal. I have hope for the future because I get to see the real work that just people such as like Jackson, Deneen, I get to see what they do every day with their lives. And I get to really be there and put the work in. And because of that, I gain hope.
I think what you're saying is like, if we don't do anything, the future is probably going to be pretty dismal. And what Lana's saying, which is pretty awesome, is, well, it's not going to be that way because we're going to make it not that way because we're going to like do good stuff.
Yes, exactly. And Deneen, this is not a one-day event. It's at least a week, and it will continue. 350 has been organizing the whole week. Deneen, why don't you tell about that?
Right. So the beauty of this event is that it doesn't just stop on September 20th. We're really trying to ignite an entire movement to continue on and keep being active and keep building power and recruiting new people to join us. So around the world, September 20th launches us into a week of action. where people around the world will be taking bold action to stop the climate crisis throughout that week and beyond. So here in Portland, we have a number of really exciting events happening throughout that week. And one that I really wanted to highlight for everyone here is the Stop Zenith Vigil that will be happening from Tuesday, September 24th until Thursday, the 26th. So for 60 solid hours, community members, faith leaders, musicians and artists, and people concerned about the Zenith facility will be gathering to keep a watchful presence on the Zenith Oil tar sands terminal in Northwest Portland.
They're getting tar sands from Eastern Canada by rail, right? And then they're shipping it to the Far East to burn tar sands oil.
That's correct. And tar sands oil is known as the most polluting form of energy on the entire planet. So here in Portland, we're really just, time is up, really, for the city of Portland to be continuing to import and allow Zenith Energy to exist in our city. If we want to call ourselves a leader in tackling the climate crisis, there is no way that we can be allowing Zenith Energy to continue operating in our city. And part of the message that we're hoping to send with this week of action is making that very clear to Mayor Wheeler and the city commissioners that if they want to be climate leaders and stand with these really amazing young people, then they need to stop Zenith Energy.
What else is happening in the week in Portland besides the climate strike on the 20th?
There will be a really amazing panel the Sunday after the strikes on the 22nd, hosted by the International Coalition for Human Rights in the Philippines. And that forum is on environmental justice in the Philippines and more of an international perspective on this crisis. There will be a lot of volunteer orientations for 350 PDX so people can join the movement for the long term. That's one of our biggest goals here. An event on Thursday, the 26th, about big timber and the climate emergency, hosted by Center for Sustainable Economy. So I'm going to direct everyone here listening to go to climatestrikeoregon.org. And on there, you can see not just the events in Portland, but all across the state. There's a beautiful map where you can see events happening throughout the week. And you can also sign up and stay involved.
Yeah, that's really inspiring. Lana and Jackson, you've been organizing for the Friday for the climate strike. Tell us about that.
Sure. So on Friday, we're meeting at Portland City Hall at 10:30 a.m. to have kind of a rally to support our demands and demand that our demands are met. And then we'll march across the Hawthorne and arrive at OMSI for this climate fair, which kind of like what Deneen was touching on is meant to get people involved moving forward and so that we are growing our movement. At my high school specifically, well, actually I'll start with the PPS thing, Portland Public Schools letter that they sent to try and get support went really well in PPS. And we tried to mirror that in my school district, which is North Clackamas, and it did not go well. And so we are not allowed to leave school without getting an unexcused absence. So we are doing a separate rally on our school courtyard earlier in the day, like right when school starts. And then we are asking students to come into Portland to get an excused absence from their parent or something to come into Portland if they want, but we're not emphasizing it as much.
Lana, what's happening at Cleveland?
Yeah, so Cleveland is part of Portland Public Schools, and Portland Public Schools has been on pretty positive neutrality just in terms with climate justice because they did recently pass a climate justice resolution. I am on the PPS Climate Justice Committee. As in terms with kind of circling this particular strike, my school actually did let us put flyers up, which they didn't last year. We were not allowed to speak at the assembly, but I think that was just terms of timing. So I'm really positive moving forward about Portland Public Schools because I have had experiences in the past that wouldn't be favorable, but as we move forward and look towards the future, I am positive in our interactions and knowing that we can move forward despite that and continue to learn and grow.
Are all the high schools in Portland, are they organized to come? Earlier we were talking and you're really confident that there's going to be participation from a lot of the students.
Yeah.
How did you manage to alert people and involve them?
Well, as I usually say, social media is activism's double-edged sword, right? Because social media can sometimes cheapen a meaning, but it also is the way that most youth can reach out to their community, right? Because if you put something on Instagram these days, you can start a movement. And just that simple action, that simple, like, show of support, it does reach people, right? Social media is a web of connection.
My sense is that even people who are not really active, they can be activated because they know that something desperate is wrong. What's your sense?
Climate change is a factor in many of the people I know, just in regards to their future, right? A lot of youth I know are having concerns about whether they want to have kids, whether that's ethical or not, what kind of future they'd like to have, because we go out there and we indebt ourselves to these billion-dollar institutions just to go towards a future that we can't even hope to look forward to, right? So it's just this combination of just looking towards the future and wanting to see something, but also seeing this duality of like knowledge, right? Because knowledge is power, and social media, sometimes it's the only source of knowledge we can acquire, right? Because as we circulate through like these movements and gaining traction and all of these things, as we look towards knowledge and we recognize like these circumstances of privilege and education, we also see that our future is holding stake. Our future is uncertain. And that's why we do these things. That's why we march for these movements, because there's no other choice, right? There's no other way we can show our support.
Jackson, you have some ideas on that issue?
I think to specifically answer your question, I sure hope that we can activate other students. I mean, how can they not notice that inaction is going to make their lives a whole lot worse in the future? And so I think it's definitely possible to activate other students, and I'm really hoping that we succeed. And that's kind of the goal, I think, of the festival at OMSI, is to begin activating other students.
I'm talking today to Deneen O'Rourke, Jackson Calhoun, Lana Paris. We've been talking about the climate strike coming up Friday, September 20th, 10:30 at City Hall. We've been discussing the politicization of young people, their fears. We've also been talking about the strike and what's going to happen and how it's going to be an ongoing operation. At least for me, this is one of the most promising things to happen in my lifetime. And I heard Martin Luther King talk when I was in college in 1962, and you could see the room filled up, and then there were people waiting, and you could see there was something happening in this country that was going to grow and grow. And I have the sense right now that that's happening, but not just in this country, in every country. I mean, climate change is so much more severe, actually, in many other places. My sense is it will be an international movement. Why don't all three of you talk about the possibilities of that international movement growing? And it won't be undermined by nationalism and racism. How do you feel about it?
Well, I think we kind of have to be a strong international movement so that we stop the climate catastrophe. There's kind of no other way to it. And definitely we need to unite and include everyone in the decisions being made, especially those that are most affected. And that's the kind of strong international movement that we need to build, so I think that we are going to.
I think growing up in America, a country that adheres to a form of white nationalism that can be debilitating to see in everyday practice, especially as a person of color or as a youth, I think that just seeing the youth grow despite that, seeing people move forward despite that, is what's giving me hope, because I have interacted with the world as a person of color. I've interacted with the world through queer spaces, and I see that climate change is interconnected, right? It's interconnected with every other issue you can fight for. We all live on the same earth, and it encompasses every other issue that it doesn't even, that we don't even talk about, right? And it's connected to immigrants' workers' rights. It's connected to environmental racism. It's connected to inherent misogyny. And just talking about climate change is fighting for all these issues, right? We are fighting for the world.
Deneen, I think you're going to get the last word. You're right in it with all of those students. You're a millennial, though. Tell us how it is to work with people.
I'm 24 years old, and when I was born in 1995, the world was at 360 parts per million of carbon dioxide. So I have never lived in a world without the climate crisis. And so to me, that is like the turning point of what it means to be a young person growing up in a world that has never been like a safe future for us to dream of. We've always had this looming threat of the climate crisis on our shoulders. And when I was a senior in high school, I grew up on Eastern Long Island in New York. And when I was a senior in high school, Hurricane Sandy hit my community. And it wasn't as bad as most other parts in New York, but it still really woke me up and made me realize that the place where I live is under extreme threat. And there's really only one other option to do with the rest of my life is to fight this crisis head on in any way I can. And so it can be very challenging a lot of the time. It feels very personal, but I feel more hopeful than I've ever felt before doing this work for almost the past 7 years because of, you know, people like Jackson and Lana and all of the amazing high schoolers that I've gotten to work with through this strike. There's so much determination and unwillingness to give up in any way. And it's inspiring. And I know that the future of this movement is like, we have the roadmap and the blueprint for how to restructure all of society in the Green New Deal.
Hey, I'm inspired. Again, Friday at City Hall at 10:30, then to march across the bridge to OMSI. There's going to be all sorts of exhibits, talks, people to meet, interesting organizations that are going to be seeking participation. So that's next Friday. Thanks so much for talking to us today.
Can I make one more plug for climatestrikeoregon.org? And that's how you can see all the events around the state.
Thank you. I think you have a future in radio. Hey, thank all of you, Jackson, Lana, Deneen.
We're in the same boat, brother. We're in the same boat, brother. And if you shake one end, you're gonna rock the other. It's the same boat, brother. A lot of look down from his holy place. He said, Lord, and me, what a sea of space. What a spot to launch the human race. So he built him a boat for a mixed-up crew with eyes of black and brown and blue. So that's how come that you and I got just one world, that's just one sky. We're in the same boat.
And now on the Old Mole, I want to introduce our new superstar. She just turned 16. There are lots of Greta Thunbergs out there. She's played a great role. In fact, she embarrassed the world's elite, the corporations, their political servants, with her vigil Friday outside the Swedish parliamentary building, then her speech to them, and then her truly amazing The Emperor Has No Clothes talk at the UN Summit on Climate Change in Poland. Those boys at the conference, many of them were corporate invited and given lead roles. They were a bit shocked, to say the least, to be chastised in the strongest terms by a 15-year-old who looked like an angel of about 12 years old and skewered them with her calm, collected, but really fierce condemnation. Here's Greta Thunberg at the UN.
My name is Greta Thunberg. I am 15 years old, and I'm from Sweden. I speak on behalf of Climate Justice Now. Many people say that Sweden is just a small country and it doesn't matter what we do. But I've learned that you are never too small to make a difference. And if a few children can get headlines all over the world just by not going to school, then imagine what we could all do together if we really wanted to. But to do that, we have to speak clearly, no matter how uncomfortable that may be. You only speak of green, eternal economic growth because you are too scared of being unpopular. You only talk about moving forward with the same bad ideas that got us into this mess, even when the only sensible thing to do is pull the emergency brake. You are not mature enough to tell it like it is. Even that burden you leave to us children. But I don't care about being popular. I care about climate justice and a living planet. Our civilization is being sacrificed for the opportunity of a very small number of people to continue making enormous amounts of money. Our biosphere is being sacrificed so that rich people in countries like mine can live in luxury. It is the sufferings of the many which pay for the luxuries of the few. The year 2078, I will celebrate my 75th birthday. If I have children, maybe they will spend that day with me. Maybe they will ask me about you. Maybe they will ask why you didn't do anything while there still was time to act. You say you love your children above all else, and yet you're stealing their future in front of their very eyes. Until you start focusing on what needs to be done rather than what is politically possible, there is no hope. We cannot solve a crisis without treating it as a crisis. We need to keep the fossil fuels in the ground, and we need to focus on equity. And if solutions within this system are so impossible to find, then maybe we should change the system itself. We have not come here to beg world leaders to care. You have ignored us in the past, and you will ignore us again. We have run out of excuses, and we are running out of time. We have come here to let you know that change is coming, whether you like it or not. The real power belongs to the people.
When we're living in the White House and debating on the Hill, of all your crazy antics, we'll all have had our fill. We'll be closing down munitions plants, and Old Glory will be fertile. 'Cause we don't want your big machines, we just want the world. And a bill will be proposed, section number one. We're shutting down the oil rigs and turning towards the sun. The air will be clean for all the boys and girls, 'cause we don't want your oil tankers, we just want the world.
Well, that was Portland's Dave Rovix. That ends today's Old Mole. Thanks to Bill Bigelow, Tim Swinehart, Jackson Calhoun of Wright & Rex Putnam High School, Lana Paris of Cleveland, Dino O'Rourke of 350 PDX, and, of course, the indomitable great Greta Thunberg. Thanks to our wonderful engineer, Patricia Kohlberg, to the people who helped with talking about KABU, Per Fagerang, Barbara Bernstein. You can hear the Old Mole Show or any part of it again or any of our previous shows or recommend us to your friends by going to KABU FM, Old Mole Variety Hour. Today's show should be up sometime tomorrow, maybe even today. Join us again next week for more news, views, reviews, and interviews from the Mole's underground perspective. One final thing. I hope to see you this Friday at the climate strike. Really important. Youth and adults standing and marching together. And the website, climatestrikeoregon.org. Look at it and examine it for the many other events and discussions and trainings and opportunities to save the planet. So long, and it's not too late to call us up. 877-500-5266.
With eyes of black and brown and blue. So that's how come that you and I got just one world, that's just one sky. We're in the same boat, brother. We're in the same boat, brother. And if you shake one end, you're gonna rock the other. It's the same boat, brother. So the boat don't know. So storm and grief hit a many a rock and a many a reef. What kept them going was a great belief. So they had to learn to navigate. That human race was special freight. If they didn't want to be in Jonah's shoes, you better be mates on the shared crew. Why? We in the same.